Hi, I'm Matthew Bennett. I'm the senior sound and sensory designer. And they've been talking a lot today. Wow, this is really a distracting situation. Can you guys hear me okay? All right. So you've been talking a lot today about Metro as a very detail-oriented visual system and the visual language. And one thing I want to talk about right now is audio, just to get you thinking about other aspects, other sound aspects, and also the sensory touch, haptic vibration aspects that you can draw on to create your experiences and align them with the Metro principles. So we're going to cover a few things here. My first thing is no more annoying audio, which is a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly in the current state of mobile audio. And then we'll talk about Metro principles that you can use and that your sound designers can use to help make great experiences. And then we'll talk a little bit about other sensory aspects like touch. And I'll spare you the Windows Phone funk since you've all heard it about 10 times now. So before we get started, it's interesting to kind of think about how our brains process music. My background is in anthropology of music and emotion, and I spent a lot of time as a film composer too. So these are things that we think of in kind of an academic but also a very applied way. The main message here is that our brains are these massively parallel processors that are designed through evolution to attend to very tiny discrepancies in sound. And we have these kinds of experiences all the time, whether it's in language, it's the sound of somebody walking near you, the sound of yourself in locomotion through a building. We're constantly attending to very, very minor, or what could seem to be very small differences in sound to make calculations about where we are in space and other things that are meaningful in our life. And one really important thing that I'd like to call out is that it's not just the syntax, it's also the process and the emotional qualities of this. There's sort of a preconscious processing where some of these, before we even know what we're hearing, it's smell is the same way, you might know. It is wired directly into the emotional centers of our brain. So it kind of our brains deconstruct the sound and then kind of put it all back together at the same time, and it goes through these real primitive parts of the brain and then through more sophisticated processing so we can assess meaning. And these give us little kind of cognitive psychological hooks that we can use when we design. And I'll call out how some of these are present in our design when we actually start to get into more specifics. So what does it mean to make mobile audio sing? It sings when it's really integrated with the experience. I think if there's one thing that I would like you to take away from this, it's that Metro is a cohesive visual language, and that audio can be a very important supporting element of that. So please try to think about any audio elements you might be using as an integrated system with Metro, and not just kind of icing on the cake or something that is applied later or left to the last minute. If you start thinking about it early on, how it can support your experience and blend with your visual design, then you can create a situation where people more feel it than actually hear it. If you think about how film music works, that's a really good paradigm. And also, I think it's important to say, we want you to use audio, and we want you to think about, to really consider it carefully, just like the visual language is carefully considered. But we also don't want you to use audio when you don't need it. A big part of Metro is fierce reduction and getting down to just what's really essential for the experience, and that can still add delight, right? So we want to apply the same sort of rigorous reductionism to audio. And we don't need necessarily gratuitous audio and lots of ear candy, unless your application's all about that. So silence and space are really important. And when we talk about designing audio experiences for Metro, we're also talking about how we build space and breath and it's as much about designing the space as it is about, and the silence as it is about actually designing the sound. I apologize for sitting down. I hope it's not too distracting, but I've got a whole lot to click through when we start on the audio, so I need to use this mouse here. So right now, most mobile audio sucks. I think that's a fair statement. We've all had lots of experiences over the years with devices, and they're variously alarming and annoying, our own devices and other people's devices. The main problem is that it's not really it's not designed to be a cohesive experience. A lot of people, a lot of designers, don't even think about it or haven't started to think about it yet as a cohesive experience. The audio is just something totally different. There's a huge rupture and a disconnect and a fragmented aspect to the way that audio is applied with the visual language. If it's even thought about at all, a lot of times it's just kind of grafted on. If you've got an audio designer in one part of the company that just kind of throws some stuff together and they slam it on a phone. And another big problem is that it's not necessarily designed. A lot of audio is just repurposed from either other UI, desktop, laptop UI, or if not even UI, it's just repurposed, you know, an MP3 file, some music, some sound effects that were designed for some other context, some other totally different user scenario being repurposed and put on the phone. And that doesn't work either, because on the phone, you've actually got a speaker that's about the size of a dime, and you have to try to get a rich audio experience through that. So if you're trying to cram a big MP3 file from Rihanna or something through there, it's probably not going to sound very good unless it was designed and mixed specifically to sound good through a mobile device. So the main two paradigms that we've been seeing sort of historically with mobile audio are the alarm paradigm and the novelty paradigm, and I'll give you some examples of those. Some you may recognize, some you may not. Okay, right. Something you wouldn't be surprised to hear out of a device. These are things that actually shipped on a partner device in the not too distant past, right? That's friendly. Pretty metro. So these things that are designed to just kind of make you laugh, and these are out there right now in devices that I won't mention any names, but you probably know who you are who have them. So the idea is to, you know, it does create a nice out-of-the-box browsing experience. It's not without merit, but you don't really hear those sounds in any sort of functional context. I've never heard anybody use those sounds on that device that shall remain nameless as part of the UI, right? It's just there in the menu. You laugh about it a few times. It gets old after about the third or fourth time you've heard it, and no one ever uses them again. We're taking a totally different approach and trying to create more of a soundtrack, what we're calling a mobile soundtrack paradigm, where it's not sound effects, it's not music per se, like an MP3 file, like a fully produced piece of music. It's more like it's somewhere in the middle. It's more of a semi-musical type of sound effect. It has musical content, but it's designed specifically to support the visual story, to be as seamless as possible. It doesn't mean you don't hear it, but if it's really integrated into the experience, you feel it. You're not even aware that you're feeling it until it's gone. If you think about the metaphor for film music, a lot of times you're not even aware that that's affecting how you feel the story or the visuals until it's gone. And the best film music is usually music that you're not even aware of, that you don't even realize you're hearing. So here are a couple examples of how of music that was out there and has been out there on partner devices, and then I'll show you some music that we're doing. Right, it's just kind of wall-to-wall sound. There's not really any breath or anything, and the quality is not very good. It sounds like an old MIDI file just transferred to audio. Got to give you the other one too, so you get the full glory. Come on. Oh well, let's just move on to ours. So now this isn't music per se, but it has musical elements. It also has a lot of distortion. Let's turn it down. Hang on for 1 second while I turn my master volume down, because that's going to get annoying if we don't deal with it now. Okay, so this is a ringtone. This is actually an alarm. So they have some emotional content, right? There's melody, there's harmony, there's a little bit of cinematic feeling going on there. I'll try not to talk over the audio. If you want me to play it again, let me know. All right. And that's our SMS sound, which is just, you know, it needs to be tight and fast and light, but it's still kind of tied musically to the broader audio language that we've designed for Metro. So we'll talk more about some of those aspects in a second. These are the Metro visual principles that you've probably heard a lot about today. This is how we map them to audio. It's not necessarily a one-to-one correspondence, but we try to get every all the major visual principles have some manifestation in the audio design process. One of the main things is depth and motion. And what I'd like to do here for the remainder of this talk is just cover three areas that you guys can start thinking about and that your sound designers can start thinking about that can make your audio sing through mobile devices. Is anyone here already using audio or have plans to use audio? Okay, great. And do you have sound designers in-house? Okay, great. So sculpt for the speaker. Mobile-friendly textures that are also human-friendly. You know, you could argue that some of those early first alarms that I played for you are mobile-friendly. They sound good through a little tiny speaker, but they're not very human-friendly. So both aspects are important. And I think I can't emphasize enough that you can't just take, or you can't always take, pre-existing audio and just port it over to the phone and expect it to sound good. One of our main challenges is that as a platform, we need to support a whole range of devices with a whole range of speaker profiles. So it's very important that the audio be optimized for mobile audio performance across the board. And there are some techniques that we use to do that. I won't get too into detail here, but we do have documents and resources available for your sound designers if they want to get in touch with us to help them do it there. And we can also consult and help you directly too in some cases. So one of the main things about sculpting for the speaker is keeping it simple. You want to keep it simple, but also have it feel rich and full. Okay, this is not ours. This is an example of something that actually is pretty speaker friendly, but there's really not much emotionally there. It's not very human friendly. That was actually a brand sound for a device that was out there. And then this is the kind of thing we're looking at now. Can you guys hear that right? So, you know, it sounds like music, but it's actually designed from the ground up to be to project through a mobile speaker. The bell textures are kind of a no-brainer. Certain kinds of bell textures work really, really well because of the overtone structure through mobile devices. But we're looking at other types of things too. Hang on, this distortion is killing me. I got to get rid of it. It's not baked into the sounds, I promise. Here's another one. This has a lot of overtones that are phasing and flanging, and that kind of overtone movement, modulating the overtones, actually sounds really good through a mobile device. And here's another one. It's really simple, but it really projects over a mobile device, and it has that added quality of being kind of light and open, but also very audible. So those are some ringtones from our new set. Another technique we can use is layering the design. We can do that with background foreground balancing and attention to composition at that level. And we can also do it using processing techniques like delay and reverb to sort of increase the sense of spatiality. Although these things have to be used kind of judiciously because you're looking at, you want it to sound rich coming from a little device, and delay and echo and reverb can help that. But if you've got too much of it, it just sounds like this, it's just this giant cavern. So sort of, as you would imagine with the Metro language, these things have to be applied very tastefully, but I'll give you some examples. Okay, this is the one that we just listened to, but in this case, what I want to call out is that, and the distortion's gone, yay. I'm going to play it again and see if you can hear the different levels going on here. There's actually about four distinct levels, and they're intentionally blended kind of seamlessly, so you don't necessarily have to think about it. The advantage is that you've got a lot of, it means you've got a lot of frequency content, lows and highs. There's a whole level of percussive attack on the top right, dancing over it. It almost sounds like a little drum or a sticks on top right. And those things really pop out of a mobile speaker and sound really good. So if someone's in a position where they're not actually going to hear some of the lower frequency content, they will hear most times the higher things that are dancing on top. So that's what I mean by layered structure. That's more of a layers built into a single sound. And I think this is another example. How to use that. So this just uses, you know, what is a stylistic element of this kind of, I don't know, Guns N' Roses or whatever you want to call it, musical language, which is delay, and as a design element that helps the sound, it helps the experience, because you've got this peak of sound, which is the original attack, and then you've got the echo that kind of trails off. So it's not wall-to-wall music, but there's also not a whole lot of silence in there. It's kind of these peak moments that then trail off. And in a mobile ecosystem, those kinds of that sort of architecture tends to work really well. It gets out of the way, people hear it, and then it kind of fades out. And then if they didn't hear it, it happens again, right? So it's actually got, if you think about it, it's got the structure of a traditional ringtone, just a landline ringtone, but it's sort of a more musical and elaborated version of that. That's another really mobile-friendly texture. All the distortion's built right in, so if the little speaker is distorting, which they often do, it just sounds like part of the style, right? So I guess everything for... What I'm saying is everything should be heavy metals, because it distorts and... think about it. Example of using background and foreground. It's still got that breath. You know, that there are these events that happen, then there's sort of space and breath. But in this case, there's a background layer of kind of digital percussive textures that are a contrast and a complement to the main piano melody. So it really uses the full range of the full potential range of these crappy little speakers that we're dealing with. But the sounds are still stratified, so they stay out of each other's way, right? I'll just play the beginning of that again. And I don't know if you noticed, but it's built on the same melody and harmony as this. My geeky design side, I have to point that out. Okay, so a lot of these sounds are built on similar DNA. It doesn't mean they're built with exactly the same melodies, exactly the same harmonies, but we've got a core set of Metro Audio DNA that we use to spin out various kinds of things. And I should also mention that we also have a library of sounds that are sort of built on that DNA that are shareable for you guys. They actually are not shipping in the device yet, but they are available to partners. So that's one resource at the end that I'll talk about a little bit. So we've got sculpt for the speaker, got layered structure, layered designs, and this notion of subtle motion, which is a principle of the Metro visual language, obviously. But how do we translate that into sound? It's not always what you think. It's not about sounds that you would even necessarily notice are really moving. And I'll give you some examples of that in a second. This comes back to your brain on music, and the notion that our brain is hardwired to detect very subtle changes in certain frequency bands, in certain other sort of ecological contexts that we can use to help create great mobile experiences. I'm going to give you one example here that's musical, and another one that I think is probably one of the most important things we're doing for Metro from an audio point of view, but it's not music at all, per se. So here's a musical example of how we're using sort of internal movement, layers, rhythm, frequency modulation of envelopes and filters to to create interest and create something that sounds really good through a mobile device, but also has musical and emotional content too. This is a variation of the one you just heard. What I want you to hear in this is actually the... I'm going to play it again. Try to listen to the background, the motion in the background. It's sort of a middle and background level. It's a filter and envelope modulation, but it really projects out of the device, but doesn't get in the way of the melody. And that's another technique that your designers can use. Even if they're not designing music, these kinds of things can be built into to simpler sounds. That kind of breathy. Okay, I'm going to spend the rest of the time talking about touch key typing. The music's all great, the sound effects, integrated audio language for Metro is great, but one of the most important sounds on the device are the touch key sounds. They can, if they're done right, they can help in the typing experience. If they're done wrong, they can be really obnoxious. And if you think about it, they're the kinds of sounds that are heard probably more frequently than any other sound, unless we do it wrong and it's obnoxious and people want to turn them off. This is the iPhone typing experience. It's a typewriter. And it's one typewriter sample every time you hit a key. It's not a terrible sound. It cuts. It's got a lot of high-end frequent and a percussive content there, so it sounds good out of the device. It can sound a little harsh sometimes. Now, what I'm going to play for you now is our experience, and instead of one sound, it's actually about eight different sounds that have very, very subtle variation. This was my point earlier about variation not having to necessarily be something that's even consciously attended to. If you're listening, you'll probably hear some variation here. You might not even hear it, but the idea is that it's not going to sound like the same sample firing over and over again. Now, I'll just play it for you and then talk a little more. And it's intentionally very soft. Each one of those little clicks, even if they sound the same, is a slight variation from the one that comes before it, and they occur in a round robin pattern, and that's because if you think about footsteps walking down a hall or something, they all sound very similar, but they're also all different because the high frequency content of each one is changing a little bit as you walk down the hall. If you think about walking down a hallway with high heels on or something I do frequently, just so I can hear the sounds right. It's professional. It's all work. But our ears really do attend to that, and you don't notice it too much until it's gone and you hear a situation, like if you just hammer on the backspace or the space bar of the iPhone, you hear that same thing over and over and over, and you can tell, our ears are hardwired to tell that it is, in our brains, that it is the same sound over and over, and that gets a little obnoxious. Not that iPhone is an obnoxious experience, that's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about just about the sound design. And ours is intentionally very, very soft because one thing that we found is that this needs to be almost, for SIP to work, for soft key typing to work really well, and for that to be an aid to typing and for that to aid the tactility of typing, it needs to be very low level. Again, so you're feeling it more than you're actually hearing it. When it's louder, it's a little more distracting. When it's soft and like a film soundtrack, just a little bit under the surface of consciousness, it actually... there's this synesthetic thing that happens where the, and this has been proven in research, the sound can actually affect it the way you feel the touch. And there's all kinds of other cool stuff around this research and light and color and texture, and they can all orchestrate together and influence each other. So if something's a certain color and you're touching it, you can actually feel it a little bit differently than if it's a cool color versus a hot color, even if the actual tactile experience of what you're touching is exactly the same. So we can use that little detail about cognitive psychomusicology to make a better touch key experience. What we've been hearing from some of the power typers is that it actually helps you type faster. It gives you the kind of feedback that you need. It's interesting, those sounds, you can tell us when you get the devices if you don't already have them. They're designed to be soft and very low profile and subtle, but they actually, if you're listening to music on the device at the same time you're typing, we've noticed that they cut through, and that's intentional. There is a little bit of high frequency content, so you'll still be able to feel it and hear it. And we've put a lot of work into refining that. There's still more to do. But that's what I mean about subtle kinds of motion. So I imagine some of the sounds that you might be using in your apps are shorter sounds. They're not going to probably be ringtones and longer things like that. So that's the kind of thing you can think about to help bring your experience to life a little bit and have more of a dynamic than a static experience. So I'm available. There are people at other people at Microsoft who are available to help with this. We don't have a program in place yet, per se, but we're very interested in partnering with you and to ensure great audio experiences. And this isn't oftentimes it's stuff that your audio designers may or may not have thought about. Most audio designers don't have a deep background in mobile, so it's just a matter of helping them a little bit to get the lay of the mobile land, and then they can take that skill set that they have outside of mobile and apply it in a way that will really help it sing on the device. Questions? Yes. I am somewhat familiar with those, and we're looking at using those as part of the shell. At this point, we're not. Okay, so the question was how much are we using XNA and that library and those processes of manipulating sound from a library in real time? It is possible to do that. The platform supports that. We are not using that yet in our shell or UI. It is possible for developers to use that, and we have resources available to help you use that. If I can't answer your question specifically, I can point you to XNA experts here who can. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. I don't understand, would you expect a lot of sound to be in an application? What are some examples?
Yeah, that's a good question. The question is, where should we use sound? Ringtones, alerts, and alarms are kind of obvious. What kind of project are you working on?
Grocery store application.
A little bit of music in the background for the grocery store. Shopping down the aisle. Where parts of the UI are, it can help communicate successful interaction with the device, button sounds, other sorts of user interactions. I don't think it's always necessary. In fact, if your app is working fine without audio, I don't think you need it. It shouldn't be there just because a button makes a click sound in real life that it has to make a click sound. I mean, we're trying to be authentically digital, right? So we're not taking a lot of really literal, real-life, physically-based sounds, physics-based sounds, and grafting them onto the device. There are UI models that do that, and some are successful. So maybe you don't need it. Maybe the answer is silence, is your Metro soundtrack. We could really take apart the UI and look at that. But I think just if you need confirmations or you just need some sort of cognitive information to be communicated to the user that you don't think that the visual design is not actually able to do. It's just another mode that you can use simultaneously to do that. Sir. Yeah, exactly. You have to think about user scenarios where, or UX cases where they're hearing the same sound over and over. Okay, I'm being told to repeat the question. The sending an email on an iPad or iPhone, you get the swish sound that confirms that the email's been sent. We actually don't have a sound in Windows Phone 7 that confirms that the email's been sent. We decided that that wasn't necessary, and that it would get obnoxious. any sound that's heard over and over, I think you run that risk.
Well, and also one thing they were talking about, we'll talk about it both by the moment, was min-graph cinematic. So was that switch details on whether it's cinematic? And you guys think the metric should be as cinematic? Was that a design decision that you guys had?
Okay, the question is, at the Apple Developer Conference, the notion that they're presenting is being cinematic. Were they specifically talking about that with sound, or just in general? Okay, that's interesting, because they've done very little with sound on the desktop or on any device to do that with audio. In fact, they seem to sort of relegate it to a whole other. It's a fragmented experience. You know, yes, you've got the trash can crumbling, and you've got a few other sounds. But they're single hit sample sounds. They're not dynamic, and you know it's subjective. But some users probably feel that they do get obnoxious, or that at the very least, I don't think anyone would ever describe those as rich, as adding to the experience in a rich way or kind of a multi-layered way. It's that very literal physics-based sound paradigm. So no, I don't think it's necessarily cinematic. I mean, you could argue that a swish sound is cinematic. Maybe it goes from right to left on the device or on the phone or something. But there's a lot more that can be done with mobile audio to contribute to the cinematic feeling. And I think we're developing for Apple here. I don't know. It's interesting to hear that that's what they're talking about, because that's what we're thinking about with our mobile audio paradigm. And I don't see anyone on the Apple side doing that. I don't think they're encouraging that at all. I don't know if they're discouraging it, but I just don't think anyone's thinking about it. And I think it's a big missed opportunity, and I think it's one way where we can differentiate and help set the bar. Yes? Yeah, okay, the question is, do I see integration with sound and other sensory elements like vibration and haptic elements? Haptic is our word for the vibration experience. Just means anything that you touch and that moves. Yes, I do. And I didn't talk about that too much. I'm a sound and sensory designer. I'm focused more on what I thought would be the most important, you know, three or four takeaways for you here. But haptic experience, especially on a mobile device, is really important, we think. It's a huge opportunity because it's so often touching your body, right? The device is so often an extension of your body. I mean, people describe it like that, right? And people love their phones; they're always in their hands, or in a pocket or something. So, unlike other devices, other computing platforms, we have a huge opportunity to literally reach out and touch. That's such a cliche, but to use that as a way to communicate and delight. So I do think that's important. We do have a haptic scripting language for Metro. I didn't get too into it today, but if you want details on that, I would encourage you to think about ways that simple vibration can work with your apps. It might make more sense for some than for others, but it's a pretty easy scripting language, and I can get you up to speed on it. No, it's not Silverlight at all. It's through the new audio sensory infrastructure. But it's easy. It's easy. Anything else? Okay, cool. Thanks.